Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello, welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast with me, Alice Arnold. Today, my guest is, well, he sort of belongs to us, really. I don't want to sound possessive, but it's Tom Chambers. Welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. We've got a family member as this week's guest.
Oh, I can't believe.
Of our magic family members, Tom Chambers. I can't believe you've never been on my podcast.
Really?
I've had years and I haven't interviewed you.
Well,
yet.
Maybe it's because I creep in and creep out again without really being noticed. Just come in.
Do you sneak in and sneak out?
I think we're like ships here, though, aren't we?
Yeah, we don't see each other much.
So for me, I've actually never done a podcast. It's my first ever. I'm a virgin podcaster.
Are you nervous?
I can feel the adrenaline already, like it's the opening night.
Tom, you are about to start. We'll talk about this more later, but you are going off on tour. Dial M for Murder, Alfred Hitchcock.
Yes.
And you play, I don't think this is giving it away, you play an ex-tennis pro who gave up his career for his wife but discovers she's been unfaithful and then...
What do you do about that?
What do you do about that? What do you do about
How far does the brain travel in the wrong direction? And if I jump straight in the deep end, the bit that's really interesting, you know, when you watch Line of Duty and these crime detective murder, they've always been popular. I mean, my mum and dad love watching Endeavour and... I mean, I've just done a Midsummer Murders, actually, as well. But
Vera,
always...
I like a Vera. Have you ever done a Vera?
Oh, yeah. Went to drama school with them. Well, not at the same time, but...
The same drama school as Brenda Blethyn?
Yeah.
I love a Vera.
Yeah, it's fair. I love the farm... Oh, well, we call it a farm car, but Land Rover Defenders.
Yes, yeah, it's good.
And the Mac and the Wellies.
Yeah. And you can follow the story and you know right at the beginning there's someone who's highly suspicious, so you know it's not them. Don't you?
I love it, yeah. The red herrings are always good, aren't they?
Yeah.
But so what...
Anyway, back to Dial M for Murder.
What was intriguing is it's written in the 50s and obviously it's an absolute world classic with it being an Alfred Hitchcock film. The bit I couldn't get away from, a bit like our music, let's say our music, the family music on the... I was going to say Mellow Magic. Timeless, relaxing classics. The writing in this, Dial M, it feels timeless. And what's quite scary is that in society now, there's an abundance of cold calling scamming. And the person on the end of the line is like, you're their best friend. And they're so warm, they're so welcoming, they're so friendly, they're so... And then you think at the end, I've been done. The point is that you can't necessarily detect who is a slight sociopathic, narcissistic behaviour or someone who, you know, you think they're wonderful and actually they're not. So I think this character, Tony, he's like, he didn't quite make it. And then when he got married, it just didn't quite go the way he wanted. So, because you have to try and find empathy for the character as well to make it believable, and you have to sort of defend yourself, which is odd.
Yeah.
Because you know you're in the wrong, but you've got to defend your own actions.
You haven't started rehearsing yet, so let's go back now, Tom.
Okay, thanks.
Now, you were famous in Casualty before Strictly.
If you watched Casualty.
A lot of people do.
They do. It is a staple diet.
Strictly that really kind of stratospherically catapulted you, would you say?
There was definitely a 15 minutes of complete and utter blinding, shining light on you at that time.
Is that what it felt like?
Oh, my word. It was like being transported to... It was like being an alien on another planet and everyone's suddenly aware of you being there and around. I mean, it was a 15-minute moment. definitely.
Well, it's a bit longer than 15 minutes.
The classical 15-minute moment. But yes, it was. I mean, it tickles us constantly that it depended on what you watched. So I would go everywhere and people go, oh, are you that bloke off Casualty? And I was like, no, it was Holby, actually. They go, were you on
Dance? Oh, it was Holby, not Casualty.
It's both, actually. You're correct.
I was going to say, it was both.
You are correct.
Because they are linked.
It was Holby back then.
Right.
But since then, as Amanda Mealing, who played my my love interest, the mother of my fictional daughter, it's quite complicated for my children to understand. I have a 13-year-old fictional daughter. She made the transfer from Holby to Casualty, so then I followed.
Right.
But at the time, it was only Holby or Strictly. All the time, I got people coming up going, are you that bloke from Casualty? I was like, no, it's Holby. Or, are you that bloke off Dancing on Ice? I was like, no, it's Strictly. It's always close, but not quite close enough.
Yeah.
And it was the most, yes, I mean, I've always had an absolute joy and passion and interest in balance, tipping point, movement, rhythm. I used to love stamping on the kitchen floor when I was about 5 years old for the enjoyment of tap dancing. I didn't know what tap dancing was. Then I watched the Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly, matinee idol films. And the key to this, actually, I've realised recently, having got my own children into Tom and Jerry, the box set, is it's the music. Because I couldn't understand, why was I interested in musicals and that sort of golden Hollywood era? And I think it was because from a young age of watching Tom and Jerry, the music, the soundtrack, is basically like a musical. And it's got that same flavour. So you're doing adult things, but to the same music. So anyway, I loved tap dancing. And I went to drama school. I was in the National Youth Music Theatre, which is an amazing way of keeping out of trouble in the school holidays. And it was the Edinburgh festivals, and it was kind of ticketing in the streets. It was proper grafting, you know, real, you know, slumming it, as it were, and trying to get audiences and all that sort of thing. But it was a brilliant National Youth. So many people have been through it. Idris Elba and the likes of so many. I can't even begin to tell you them all. And then, drama school. But out of drama school, you basically, back then, you did it to get your equity card. And so it was a catch-22. You couldn't get an audition.
Without an equity card, and you couldn't get an equity card without having a job, so you were stuck.
Exactly.
Unless you did cabaret or something.
Yes, like a pilot's license.
Yes.
Getting your hours up.
Yeah, you did have to do that, really.
And then they abolished that. But you still had to get an agent. An agent, you couldn't get an agent without them seeing you in something, and then another catch-22. Eventually, I got this agent who sadly, well, I'm saying this, but I mean, in 2 years, it was pretty much tumbleweed. I think I got Bob the Builder, the arena tour, which I turned down. Can't believe it.
Were you going to be Bob? Or something Bob, weren't you?
Dipsy, I think.
Okay, yeah.
Tipper Digger.
And you thought about it and thought, no, this is not how I saw my career panning out.
Small window.
Yeah.
It was like two joysticks. It was like flying a helicopter, making this machine come alive. It was great fun, but I didn't think it was acting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I missed a part on the bill for not having an HGV license. I thought, I'm never going to let this happen again. Rowan Atkinson's got one. Chris Eubank's got one. HGV licenses. So I went back to where I live in Derbyshire.
Local HGV.
Quarry.
No.
I got my HGV license.
Can you ride a horse? Because that's always useful.
I can badly. Yeah. I fell off one through a barbed wire fence, got the scars on my back to prove it. My sisters used to enjoy that, but not me so much.
No.
So the HGV license, and then, of course, since then, I've never had a request for an HGV driving job since then. So anyway, I then I thought my agent fired me because I didn't do Bob the Builder. I had no agent. And this was years later, having gone through 3 years of drama school, and my parents were saying, come on, it's about time you... I said, I'm just going to do one last thing. I'm going to write a letter to the Raw Variety Show. Dear John, literally, dear John, please can I come on to the Raw Variety Show? In the days before YouTube and before all the online video thing. Can I come to the Raw Variety Show? I'm going to do a tap dance with a drum kit. Thinking, what would a modern-day audience connect to? Because tap dancing, a bit old-fashioned. So it was a damsel in distress, and I recreated it, VHS tape, on pause, frame by frame. And I made a floor, put up some mirrors, and I recreated it. And I told them this is my idea, and they said, it's a great idea, get it ready. So I spent 9 months, it was about 5,000 hours it took me on my own, as like Seabiscuit, trying to get this done. 3 weeks before, the Raw Variety, I phoned them up and I said, I've got it ready. And they said, oh, don't bother coming. We're full now. We've got mime artists, jugglers, everything we need. Absolutely gutted. So I phoned my old school, said, can I just come and film it on the stage during the holidays? Because I've done all this work. I sent out 1,000 copies on DVD, again, because of before online videos. 600 in the UK, 400 to America. Out of 1,000, I got 2 responses. Probabilities of numbers. One was a man saying, oh, I'd love to do a Fred and Ginger evening, vaudeville. Come and do an evening. And that was just a one-off. But the other one was an audition at Holby City. And they said it's because they were looking for an American doctor. Now, Fred Astaire was American. So that guy, he must be American. Let's get him in. No dialogue in this tap dance whatsoever. Just silent.
That's extraordinary, though, isn't it?
Mm.
So, and then what happened when they found out you weren't American?
So I went in the room and they said, I did my best American. I really worked hard at it. And they actually said, you know what? We think you're better than this. Come back next week and audition for this other part we've got in mind. It's a 3-year contract as Sam Strachan. And they said, they also said, where have you been? I said, I've been writing letters to you for 6 years trying to get an audition and get it in the room. So it was literally, that was a life-changing moment. I woke up morning at 5 a.m, had to get out of the house and go for a bike ride because my brain was so busy waiting for the phone to ring to say, have you got that job? Have you got that job? Have you got that job? Because, of course, I didn't have an agent. The point of doing the role.
So they were going to ring you direct?
Well, at the same time, I managed to get... through this whole link of things, I managed to get a new agent. But the reason for doing the Raw Variety show in the first was to get a new agent because I didn't have an agent.
That is an incredible story of perseverance. I mean, it really is. You know, 1,000... To send out 1,000 DVDs.
Took 5,000 hours, 9 months.
And cost you lots of money as well.
It certainly did.
I mean, it was not cheap.
No, because I went in to get jiffy bags to post the DVDs. I got it down to 5p a bag. And that's good. You go and buy
a jiffy bag, they're like
35p a bag at the best. I got 5p a bag. And then the DVDs themselves, you know, having to try and get discount. I felt like I was on The Apprentice.
That is extraordinary. What a story to do that. Now, you've got another fascinating story, which I did find out when I looked you up. Why you proposed to your wife when you did, which your wife was your childhood sweetheart.
Mm.
And weren't you in a rather nasty incident on a... Well, you're here, so we know how the story ends.
Yeah.
But...
Yes, it was before the days they locked the cockpit doors on aeroplanes. So it was the year 2000 going into 2001. And it was a flight going to Nairobi, Kenya. My sister had... married a fella out there and we were all going to go out and see her. I couldn't get on the same plane as the rest of my family, so I had to go on this other plane so I was on my own. And this man was just delirious. He stormed into the cockpit and tried to crash the plane. And if you've ever watched Final Destination, the film, Hollywood movie, the way humans react when they think, uh-oh, your time's up, it was the most... And I wouldn't wish it on anyone because it sounds, oh, that must have been exciting. No, it wasn't.
No,
just don't.
How did people react?
They were...
By and large.
There were so many people from around the world on that plane and you could hear all the nationalities praying out loud in their own language, which was... So it was like a cacophony of prayer.
Of people praying. Was the first thing people did, really, was it? Or was...
Oh.
So they didn't scream and panic. They... prayed.
Well, I mean, you could just tell something wasn't right because suddenly the plane, it was five in the morning for the UK, but 8 a.m. over there. So it was broad daylight over in it. So you could, you know, there was plenty of, it wasn't in the dark or anything, but the plane just suddenly veered. It went on for 2.5 minutes because autopilot, and because it was that time in the morning, UK time, the pilots were asleep apart from one. So you can imagine he's there. This man comes in, he goes for the other controls. Any movement on the controls knocks the autopilot off immediately. So this man is pushing down while the pilot is pulling back and pulling up, and he's shouting for the others to come in. And it was actually the passengers in first class upstairs, double decker, who actually came in and got their arms around his neck and stuck a thumb in his eye to drag him out of the seat. But in that time, yes, some of the, I used to say, oh, all the gas masks fell, came down and beep, beep, beep. But no, they did actually fall down accidentally. They didn't all come down. A trolley went down the aisle and smashed into someone's leg.
Because of the movement of the plane.
Well, it would bank and then it would go straight down. So the tip, I had a window seat as well, on the downside, the bit where you're seeing the ground coming up towards you. And the tip was so far over. Apparently, we were a couple of degrees from doing what they call the roll of death.
I don't think I can ask you any more about this because I am going to fly shortly.
Oh.
And I'm now feeling a bit strange about
safest
it.
Safest way to travel.
Let's,
don't worry.
Yeah, I know. Let's.
Absolutely.
Let's
and they locked the doors now. And we were 4 seconds from apparently the point of no return. And we were all very, very lucky. Very lucky. And thank the Lord that, yes, or whoever, whatever.
And then you thought, right, can't waste any more time. I'm going to ask this woman to marry me. Was that sort of what happened?
That was, I mean...
Was that just a story?
I did think, I really hope she calls me, at least, to say, are you all right? Which she did. But to be fair, at the time, it was still far too early for us to get together. We went to the same school. Her dad taught me geography.
Oh, that's sweet.
And 10 years later, I went back to the school to do like a theatre thing. It was promenade outdoors. She was backstage in the crew. I was on stage and I saw her across the room and I thought, wow, is that my old geography teacher's daughter? I can't believe it. She's grown up.
Oh, so you weren't childhood sweethearts? You didn't go out with her when you were at school?
No. We were just at the same school together.
Yeah.
And her parents, her dad taught me. And I told my mum, I said, Mum, I think I've met the girl I want to marry, but it's too early. I'm only 20, you know. And so she said, well, you should at least tell her, because otherwise one day you'll meet her in 10, 15 years' time. And she'll say, oh, I wish you'd told me, because I felt the same way. So I did tell her, freaked her out, because I said, not yet, in about 7 years.
I want to marry you.
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Had you been out with her by this stage at
not
all?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Nothing.
You just saw her and
thought,
I want to marry you.
We had one kiss. We had a kiss. And I thought, and that was it.
Just first no person. Conversation, just a
no
kiss.
Kiss. I told her, and so I said, yeah, I don't want to freak you out. She said that she actually had written in her diary when she was 13, one day I'll marry Tom. Not that this is sci-fi, spooky movie.
No, but that's like fate, isn't it?
We just had our 11th wedding anniversary, actually. Oh. We got three.
That's just a brilliant story. Brilliant story.
Wow. Yeah.
This is your next play.
We're trying.
No, it's lovely. Now, you've done lots of... You were in Emmerdale as well, and then you baddie in that. You do good-looking baddie, I think. This is the thing, you see. We look at you, we think, oh, he looks nice, handsome. He's evil. Underneath, he's evil.
Evil and twisted and dark and
he's a wrong'un. Well,
lots of actors want to play a baddie.
Mm.
And after Strictly, I was given the opportunity to play a real horrible Machiavellian baddie as on Waterloo Road as an executive head, even though I didn't feel qualified to drive a car, never mind being an executive head of a school. And I hated it so much. It made me feel ill. They wanted me to stay on. Because when you're doing 15 hours a day, because it's a 12-hour day, 7 till 7, and then you're having to learn your lines for the next day, especially when you've got loads of lines because you're playing the head, you've got lots of talking to do. And it was very like, but not as good a quality. The Last King of Scotland, the actor on that, whose name escapes me, Forrest Whitaker, he said he couldn't wait to take that cloak off of the character he was playing because it was so dark. And it does, it has an effect on your, I think, your soul and your happiness and blah, 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 all that thing. Mental health, basically. So I didn't really like playing the villain.
But also people will come up to you because it's a running drama and probably be horrible because they do believe that. And I've had friends who've played baddies in things like EastEnders or whatever.
Yeah.
Their life is a misery.
It is.
It properly is. They go into a pub and everyone's like, don't like you.
You're, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You think, it's a drama.
Yeah, it's not real.
But it couldn't. You are taking a bit of a risk.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, at least the difference between the Max on Waterloo Road and Clive. I was only given a Christian name,
yeah.
No surname. The character I played on Emmerdale, Clive, the difference was I was trying to do it like Catch Me If You Can, because he was an art scammer. I mean, he was one of those lovable rogues who was in jail for, you know, a bit of time, but actually a bit of a, you know, I was trying to do it in a charming way. So that made a difference, rather than definitely being a baddie.
So what are we liking more, the long-running TV dramas or stage?
The difference is so remarkable. The beauty of being able to do television or radio is the fact that you make a mistake, you can go again, and you can delete the information and it's a fresh new day tomorrow. With theatre, the beauty is you're sharing a once-in-a-lifetime experience with an audience. It is so palpable. Is that the right word? It's so... You can feel the energy in the room, and you're all living in the moment. And I think it's very, very good for your health. If we had to do a donation thing at the end of a play or a show, I'd always say we're like the entertainment doctors, you know. But then we're hoping to do things for real doctors to help society and whatever. But I sort of thought it is like that. It is a bit of medicine going to the theatre.
It's a shared experience, you see, which television. Film can be a shared experience if you go to the cinema, but television by and large not shared, and you may be with one other person.
Even then, you're also afraid to laugh in the cinema a little bit more, whereas in theatre, because it's like there's someone on stage and they're right there and they're talking to you and then they're pointing at you or you feel like they are, then it can make you much more responsive. But the only thing with theatre is that, wow, you have to be an athlete, especially if it's musical theatre. Your body's got to be 100%. You've got to look after your ligaments. You go into ice baths. You've got to look after your nutrition. You think you can have 5 meals a day of anything you like, but you can't. It's got to be slow release energy. I mean, it's a science, and then you've also, whatever the weather, flu periods or something like that, or colds, or you've got to sing through it. You've got to work out techniques. If you've got something in your throat and you're about to, and you've got to maintain it while you're halfway through note D flat or something, singing on stage, and then you've got to look after your lungs when you've finished dancing to be able to start talking or going to singing. And then the key thing is you've got to stay plugged into the content. You can't let it go. You've got to keep it in your brain, because you're going to the next place the next week and the next week, and so you can't let go of any information. So you never actually step down until the contract is over.
I'm exhausted with you describing it.
But it's wonderful.
I read recently, this is a sort of a rumour, but they were suggesting replacements for Ardal O'Hanlon in Death in Paradise. Did you see this story?
No.
No. I'm not saying you've got the part, Tom, because I can't
love
break
that
to you. Well, you were listed as one of the 6 possible replacements under nothing but rumour,
I have to say.
I don't think this was based on any fact at all, but you were suggested that you might... Now, there's a gig, because basically you get to swan about in the Caribbean for a while.
That's a golden wicket.
It's a nice gig, but it would take you away from your little ones.
Yeah.
And your missus.
That's why the other chap actually stopped anyway, isn't it? Because he couldn't bear to be away from his family. Which I also, that's the other tiring or rather slightly emotionally exhausting part of theatre, especially if it's a UK tour, is that you're... week to week, and Saturdays.
But you could take, because you've got 3 little ones. One of them is very little.
Yes.
The other 2 both started school, have they?
Yes, 8, 5 and 1.
Because I was going to say, otherwise you'd just go to the Caribbean with all of them.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, there is homeschooling, and I think Claire would be very good at it. So maybe there's still a chance and opportunity yet.
Yes.
That would be the most amazing. That would feel like Pirates of the Caribbean, because that's the one thing I'm very jealous about that film. Anything you get to be in a film where you're, or anything, it's like by the sea. By anything, even Dr. Martin, anything by the sea.
Right,
I love being by the sea. Cold, freezing water.
Even cold sea.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'll just take the warm sea for me. Now, when do you start rehearsing Dial M for Murder?
We start on, basically December. So we're having to cut through Christmas and New Year. We're working New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
Are you? New Year's Day?
Yes, we are to rehearse.
Are you?
Because we open on the 13th of January in Richmond.
Right. Okay. So Christmas. Well, there'll be sort of line learning and stuff going on while you're eating your turkey.
Yeah, and there's not enough rehearsal time to line learn, so I'm doing that now.
You're going to go in off book, are you?
80 pages, yeah, off book. Yeah. Okay. But without preconceived ideas, because that's the as you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trouble is, you learn them and then, yeah. Mm. But you probably do need to if you haven't got enough time to, you know, because you need to know where, you're going to say them. Where will you move?
Know them in the... Yes.
Yes. So what will Christmas be? You got Christmas Day
at home,
obviously.
Yes.
So Christmas is at home.
Yes.
With the little ones terribly excited about
terribly,
it.
Magical. Yes.
Yeah. But you'll be hosting it, or do we go to your family hosting?
We will... We've just done a bit of work at home where we've just opened a few, you know, taken that middle... That we had a 1959 house with that wall in between the dining room and the kitchen, and we've got rid of that.
It's come down. Of,
share the experience, which it is. It's the heartbeat of the house, isn't it? The kitchen.
Yeah.
So you should all be in the same room while it's all happening. It's, you know, theatre at home. Yeah. It is in ours.
So you'll all be there unwrapping.
So, yeah, we're at home. We'll be together.
And having a wonderful time and getting ready to open on the 13th of January at Richmond.
Yes.
And then going all over, including Dubai.
That's a surprise, that is. It was a surprise to all of us.
After Basingstoke and wherever else.
Yeah, we're going to be in Milton Keynes on the Monday.
Keynes,
Dubai on Saturday,
Dubai,
Milton Keynes on the Monday. Yeah, that is...
Yeah, that'll be a... Your body temperature thing will be a bit awry.
Southend, Dubai, Milton Keynes.
Perfect.
How about it?
Perfect.
Come on, get your tickets in. All over the country. All over. Any way you can possibly imagine, we're going to be there. It's 204 performances. It's something like 33 weeks, that sort of thing. It's not that I'm counting, but yeah, I do have the information to
hand.
You're
looking at your schedule now. Well, good luck with it. Can't wait to see it, Tom. Thank you for doing the podcast. Way overdue.
Well, thank you. It's kind
finishing
of you to say
now.
That.
We're finishing it now.
Thank you.
Was Tom Chambers talking to me, Alice Arnold, on the Magic Musicals and Theatre podcast, the only podcast, really, that you ever need. And that was the last podcast of this season. We will be back in the new year with more treats for you.